Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Liberty Talk FM.
It's a marvelous night for a moon dance with the stars up above in your eyes. A fantabulous night to make romance beneath the cover of October skies. Get all the leaves on.
What's up? What's up, everybody? Welcome aboard to the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz and got my buddy here today, Dan Stesich from Athena Private Wealth, the big angry redhead, the guy who yells at me on Varney all the time, but here he is. You yell at me in person, live and in person. My man, Dan Stesich, Athena Private Wealth. What's up, Dan?
I'm doing well, Todd. It's always good to talk to you. And, yeah, I do yell at you, but it's always deservedly.
You know, you know, we have different opinions, and, you know, I'm sure we have different opinions now, but we'll kind of hash it out and, you know, kind of get people ready for the new year. I mean, you know, as traders, we know that the year is basically over. I mean, you know, Friday is triple witching expiration, and certainly, of course, the floor is empty now anyways, but if it wasn't empty, it would be empty based on the time of year, and, you know, the next 2 weeks are going to be really nothing, right? I mean, we've got nothing to look forward to. We've got nothing to talk about. We've got, you know, no business, and, you know, most guys will be on vacation, so the markets will be quiet. So it's really a look ahead, a look back at 2015, and, you know, pretty much of a nondescript year. What was your take of 2015, Dan?
Well, you know, let's, in the overall sense, I didn't think we'd see much of a big move because we had so much up movie prior to that. And it ended up being the case, you know, we're actually a little bit down for now. I'm a little surprised at how the year pulled off. Because, as I said, if you look at it over 12 months, we haven't seen much of movement, but we were getting some decent gains in there in the middle of the year. And that's kind of frightening because I think even as I've told you in the past, I was starting to get a little nervous as to why the markets were rallying for the reasons they were rallying. And they weren't good reasons. But now, I think everything's just still trying to catch up. I think the big surprise for me is how far and how long the price of gas has stayed down. I'm happy about it because finally supply and demand have taken hold. And in that particular market, for many years prior to that, I don't think the supply-demand equation was intact, and now I think it is.
Well, now again, you and I are definitely on opposite sides of this trade, but the lower gas prices are not creating more retail sales in the market. So, I think that the lower gas prices are helping people pay their rent and live versus anything else. I don't think it's I think it's a benefit to them, but I don't think it's going to benefit the economy the way that the so-called experts are saying it's going to.
You know, you're absolutely right, Todd, and I was wrong on that one. You and I argued that earlier in the year that this money would be passing through to the economy, and it hasn't. It's gone into consumer savings. I think consumer savings this year are up 5.6%, equates to over $100 billion. And, you know, that whole penny, they say for every penny drop in a gallon of gas, $1 billion is added to the economy. Well, it was, but it was added to the savings. Now, there are some indications that spending has gone up a little bit. Even in the last GDP number we had, which was lousy, consumer spending was up a bit. And then we're just going to have to look to see if finally people do it. I think the reason, and you were right in this, is the consumer still isn't confident. So they're looking at their pocketbooks, they're looking at what happened, and they're saying, you know what, I sure would like to buy this or I'd like to buy that, but I don't trust it. I'm going to put the money in the bank so that when I need it, I'm going to take care of it. And as you said, pay down some bills as well.
So, I mean, again, I say, Dan, 2015, we can talk all we want about the great move in the markets, and obviously we went nowhere, but the Russell is down 5%. That, certainly, and the Russell was at one time down about 15% and is now looking like it's working its way back down there. I don't see a lot of real positives out there right now. What are you seeing?
Well, if there's positives that are going to come out, you know, I think one of the reasons we're not down further than we are is that despite your view on this, our economy did better than you think. And our economy was able to keep a certain level of buoyancy to the markets. because if you look at what happened in Europe and in China, those markets didn't do well. And by all rights, you would have figured that would affect us a lot harder than it did, and it didn't. So if there's any positive to be found in the markets, and let's assume our market or our economy muddles along as it is, there doesn't seem to be any indication that it won't. If the European markets gain any consistent traction, and I'm going to leave China completely out of it right now, if the European markets gain any kind of traction, that may be a help. But that's going to be a big if, because they haven't been able to do it. They get a month or two where you see some decent numbers, and then they get 3 months where they're not so good.
Well, again, you talk about traction, and I understand your point, but where, you tell me where things are actually better for the people that are the most important to this market, which is the middle class. Because, again, I will repeat this as I've done for 1,000 times. The rich don't give a crap one way or the other. They make money. They always make money, and they always spend, and they don't worry one way or the other, because, you know, when the markets are, or when markets are, there's financial problems, they're just accumulating more assets because they have the assets to do it. The entitled don't, they spend what they get. But the middle class are not spending, which is the real true economic driver. So where are things better in your mind?
Well, I agree with you that the rich, I won't say they don't give a shit, because that's not the case on all of them. But in the overall scheme of things, it doesn't look like they are, because they're still doing quite well. And the middle class is stuck. And in the lower class, forget that. Right now, I feel terrible for what's going on in that sector of the economy. But as far as the middle class, you and I argue about employment all the time. I'm sure we'll get into it today. But there is improvement in employment. It's gradual and it's very, very slow, but there's improvement. So that's why we muddle along. So I do agree with you. But if you look at construction, construction has improved quite considerably. Manufacturing, it's aside from the last month, it's been doing all right. And again, just all right. So there are pockets there. And then I'm going to touch on a little bit of employment right now. I'm sure, well, whether we talk about it or not, it doesn't make a difference. This is a good point to do. One thing, and this is a psychological thing, this doesn't have anything that I can quantify, but there's a thing called the quits rate and the JOLTS survey, the job opening and losses tally they put out each week. And the quits rate is going up, and what that indicates is that people are feeling a little more comfortable that they'll quit a job without having a new one, in knowing that they'll probably get a better job. So that is an encouraging sign right now. Very preliminary, but it is an encouraging sign.
Well, again, the jolt is just that, a piece of crap jolt. It don't mean jack. I put the right terms in, but I don't want to get into that. But we will get into employment, because I think you're whacked on this topic. But we'll get into a lot of topics. But What do you have right now? We're coming up towards a break here, Dan, but what do you got, some of the things that you're thinking about for your clients right now?
Well, you know, I've been neutral for a while, still staying neutral, and what the big concern now is, stay with positions you have, but let's monitor these things real closely, because it won't take much to tip us to the downside, and significantly the downside, so I want to pay attention to that.
Yeah, and, you know, Dan is with Athena Private Wealth, and Dan is a financial guy, been in the business for 1,000 years. He's old, but in all seriousness, he's again, when you talk to Dan and the group over there, they give you the straight scoop. It's really about how to protect and preserve your assets, because they're not interested in the day-to-day. They're interested in what we call preserving wealth. And there is a difference between making money and making wealth, or preserving wealth, and that's Dan Stesich at Athena Private Wealth. Make sure you check him out. This is The Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horowitz. Make sure you check out thebubbashow.org and see what we're doing with our hedging program that we're now offering. Again, the Badger and I put together one great package. In fact, it's so good, it's going to be, we'll be the only ones using it, and I urge you to check it out. Go to thebubbashow.org or bubbatrading.com, and also check out what we're writing about and what we're doing. This is The Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz will be right back after the break with more with our man Dan Stesich. The Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz will be right back. Welcome back to The Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz hanging out with my boy Dan Stesich, the big angry boy, big angry redhead, as we like to call him, seen on Fox, BNN, CNBC. He's all over. He's like, you know what, all over the place, but we love him. All right, big boy. Jobs. So we had that jobs number of 211,000 that everybody's raving about. But how come nobody talks about the 50,000 jobs that were lost the same week, that those 50,000 people will make more money than the 211,000 jobs that they created? So explain that to me, please.
No, well, you're talking about a pencil point in time, and I agree with you. You know, that you're talking about the oil industry jobs that are going off, the big high-paying jobs. And that is one of the aspects of employment that's not good. And, I'm going to characterize the employment number a little differently than you had characterized it. Everybody said how great it was. I don't think it was great. I think it was decent, again, plodding along, just slow going, but improvement. And so if you add up the monthly loss of the, who was it, not Halliburton?
Schlumberger.
Doesn't make a difference who it was.
Schlumberger. But Halliburton, too.
Schlumberger, that was. Halliburton's on their way, too. But if you look at the overall employment trend, it's a better trend. So you have to look at this thing in a long-term basis. Will Halliburton and Schlumberger lay off that many each month? No, they won't. So that's out of the system. There's more to come, but that part of it's out of the system. Net-net, the number was still okay.
Okay, but again, why are we satisfied? The Federal Reserve has put $4 trillion into this market, into the world. Okay, their balance sheet is 77-1 leveraged. Okay, so how can we accept 211,000 jobs? It's not even enough to sustain, let alone an increase. We're still at participation rates that are ridiculous. We're still not paying people any money. So where is the jobs good? You got to help me out here. This is where I have the problem understanding that jobs are good, because it hasn't been that much of an improvement. And how many of these jobs that they just showed are really just jobs that are for December for the retail stores?
Yeah, no, there's definitely going to be seasonal adjustments. But again, I always compare apples to apples, Todd. And I agree with you on the participation rate and these other things. But when you go from one month to the next, they take into account the seasonal adjustment. But the only evidence I can give you, and I give it to you, I think, every time we talk, is anecdotal evidence. And it's my buddy who's a carpenter. And he deals with a lot of unions. And he said the amount of employees that they're bringing in on a month-to-month basis is significant. It's quite strong. The amount of permits going up for cranes in the downtown area, Chicago downtown area, has gone up. There's tons of activity out there that is slowly working its way into the system. And those are the good-paying jobs, the ones you're not really hearing a whole lot about. But they're working their way in. And if a carpenter is telling me this is happening, that means a plumber, an electrician, a steel worker, any of the union jobs are starting to improve, and those are the ones we want. And then as far as the participation rate, that absolutely has to be improved. You know, there's going to be some effect on people retiring and out of the system, but not to the effect that we've seen right now, where I think the lowest since is at 73, and that is unacceptable. So until this economy fully mends itself, and that's the big question, what are we going to do to get this economy to mend itself? You won't see the massive jump in employment that we really need to get going.
Okay, now, I hear your point. I saw Home Depot's earnings were great, and that makes sense, because people can't buy new housing because they can't borrow money. So they're not buying new housing, they have to repair. Okay, but now, carpenters, plumbers, everybody's working. How come the price of copper is in the toilet?
Well, the price of copper isn't just a function of what happens in the U.S. China is not purchasing anywhere near what they were doing, and they were probably overbuying it, so there's a glut in the market. Same thing with some of the steel products. China's still producing and dumping into the market where it's not warranted, but the demand in the U.S. domestically is still there. Europe is flat, so you won't see much there, and certainly the Russian economy is not helping out on any of that either. But again, I'm going to the domestic market right now. We're not the same as Europe. We're not the same as China or Russia.
But we are tied together globally, and global problems affect us. I mean, we are in a currency battle between everybody. I mean, I'm not so sure it's not manipulated, but that's another point for another conversation. But the global economy is tied together. So how does that make our economy so much better? Again, I don't see it. I mean, I would love to see it, but I know last week there was a survey saying that the middle class has been reduced again. Okay, so again, we go back to the driver of the economy, which is always the middle class. So how do we get past this part of it? How do we free up and bring back entrepreneurial people, and how do we come back and bring back small business?
Well, it's kind of exactly what I just said, and in a roundabout way, you're agreeing with me. I didn't say our economy is doing great. I said our economy is doing okay. And what it's going to take to make our economy do great is for the world economy to start improving. And who knows when that's going to happen. I'd like to think it's going to happen this year. I don't know that it will. If it does, then our economy is going to grow because we'll open up overseas and we'll be in better shape.
You and I can be on the opposite sides here, because, again, I don't see it. I think that we've got a total nightmare here, and I think now the banks are going into the opposite problem that they had in 2007-08 when they were overlended, because one of the problems that we're having now is the underlending. I mean, it's obviously very dramatic for a small business who needs to have that line of credit to roll their money over. But the problem is since banks aren't lending, they're not getting enough return. So even though their balance sheets are showing nice profits, they're not making enough money to survive, and they're going to run into the reverse problem. What do you think about that?
I'm not so sure that that's the case. I agree with you that they aren't lending what they need to and not making the profits they need to. But I also think they've tightened up their balance sheets to the point where if there is a problem, they're going to be able to withstand a little better. I don't see any imminent bank collapses out there. It doesn't mean that it won't happen, but I don't see it right now.
Well, I mean, I'm not saying that they're going to collapse, but I'm saying that they're going to start to run into trouble, because when they're not lending out Tier 1, 2, and 3 capital, because they're just giving it to the United States government based on the full faith and credit, I mean, they can only give 1 to 1. So they borrow at 0 and they give it at 1 over 1. Well, when they're laying it on the street, they can loan it out sometimes at 9 or 10 to 1. So they're really not making enough money, which creates another issue altogether, does it not?
Well, yeah, but again, it's going to take... you're presuming this is going to go on ad infinitum, and that's not going to happen. Something's going to give one way or the other, good or bad. I'll tend to think it's going to happen on the good side. And when it does, the lending will free up. That's definitely been a problem. I think the government got way too far involved in what the banks can do and cannot do, or what they can't do, and that's created the lending problem we have. Hopefully, in the next year and a half, we'll see some leadership come in there and say, hey, let's address these problems, and let's address them properly. And I'm not talking about the presidential elections. I'm talking about next year with the Congress that's in place. Maybe they'll get some sanity in their heads. It's unlikely, but there's a possibility they'll address some of the flaws in the system right now.
Well, now again, so if we look at the flaws in the system, they're abundant, and of course you can look at many. And I think, and I want you to think about this because I want you to answer it when we come back from the break. But we have totally, almost single-handedly wiped out the small businessman. We have wiped out the entrepreneur. The spirit of the entrepreneur is gone because they don't have access the funds except through some of these peer-to-peer lenders, which they charge almost usury rates. And as you know, the key to any business, especially ours, is liquidity. And if you're paying way too much in commission for a trader, or too much in lending or an interest rate for a borrower, that definitely has a direct effect on your liquidity. So when we come back, you'll answer that for me. I'm with my man, my friend Dan Stesich, and we're certainly on different sides of the argument here, but that's always okay, because as we always like to say, that is what makes a market, and that is the price discovery that we get. But make sure you check out Dan at Athena Private Wealth. You can reach him at 847-299-8877, and check him out on Twitter too. What's your Twitter handle, big boy?
Daniel K. Stesich.
This is the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz. Make sure you go check out thebubbashow.org or bubbatrading.com to see some of the new strategies working on, and also to get this show on demand, because of course not only we play live every day, but we come on demand so that you can, if you miss an episode and you want to get back, you go to libertytalk.fm and get the show on demand. This is the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz with Dan Stesich of Zenith Private Wealth. We'll be back right back after the break. The Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz.
In other words, trust. For nearly four decades, that is the reputation Roberts & Roberts Brokerage has forged with their customers. Now, with their full e-commerce website, rrbi.co, it's easier than ever to buy or sell precious metals via Bitcoin or major credit card. Visit them online at rrbi.co or call 800-874-9760 to speak with an experienced professional today. Roberts & Roberts, when you're serious about precious metals.
What's up, everybody? Bubba here. It's finally here, the long-awaited Bubba Report, bringing you news from all the trading floors across the globe. We've got Scott Cialdini, the cow guy, as seen on CNBC, Fox, and Bloomberg. We've got Keith Bliss, CNBC, Fox, and a floor trader at the New York Stock Exchange. We've got the Badger, who writes the hot topics in the political news. We've got myself putting together my own unique indexes that will help you give you a better idea of what's going on in the market. All you need to do to get a hold of the Bubba Report is go to thebubbashow.org and sign up for the newsletter, or you can email me direct at bubba@thebubbashow.org. We want you to have this report because we've got over 150 years of experience talking about markets, getting ready for the trading, and puts you in the best position to have successful. So email me at bubba@thebubbashow.org to get a copy of your report, or go right to the website, thebubbashow.org. Make sure you get it. It's a must-have for every investor and trader. The Bubba Report. Welcome back to the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz with Dan Stesich, Athena Private Wealth, the Angry Bird, the Angry Redhead. And so, Dan, tell me, how are we going to increase the middle class and get them back to working so they're supporting the economy and they can actually start going back into businesses again?
Well, I think the first thing you have to address is what we spoke before the break, is how do we get our government running properly again? By giving the entrepreneur the freedom to go out and create the new opportunities that are out there. A lot of it has to do with the banking system. It's been extraordinarily difficult to get a loan. Not only the entrepreneurs, if you were to go to refinance a house, it's unbelievably difficult, even if you have a really well-paying job. That has to be addressed, and I don't know why it is. The problems that were caused in the 2009 crisis were the result of banks just going overboard. And I understand you need to tighten that up, but then the federal government went completely at the other side and tightened it to the point where they're hamstringing everybody. So until we get some clear thinking out of D.C., and man, that's a tall, tall order these days, until we see that, you're going to have trouble seeing the entrepreneurial spirit be able to bloom.
Yeah, so you look at the entrepreneurial and what goes on and the dramatic effect, because most entrepreneurs, you know, start out middle-class people, you know, like you and me, looking to build a business, and they can't borrow. So do you think there'll be any amendments or any changes to the Dodd-Frank and all the other crap, these stupid regulations these guys have out there?
You know, I think you may see a little bit of progress this year. I don't think it's going to be a drastic amount. If there's going to be any change, it's going to be as a result of the presidential election. So we're still, you know, 15 months off because the election's next November. You don't get the new Congress and president until January. We better hope to God it's not Hillary Clinton or Bernie Sanders, because otherwise we got a problem. And for that matter, I don't think we want Donald Trump either, but that's a different story.
Do you think that Bernie Sanders could actually win, in your opinion, sir? I mean, in all seriousness, do you think he could actually win?
In a general election, I think it's almost impossible. In the primary, it's possible only if something really, really bad comes up with Hillary, because what are they going to do? They're going to have to come up with somebody really quick to fill the void. As it stands, I don't think she can. And you listen to some of his proposals. I just saw one the other day on what he wants to do with energy. And it's ridiculous. This country, you think we had problems in 2009, and for that matter, in the Depression of 29, we see problems that we've never seen experienced in the history of the world. This guy is just way, way out in left field on this stuff, and his policies are bad. However, there's an appeal to them because people all seem to think that money grows on trees and we can do whatever we want if the government takes care of it. It's a bad precedent that we would set. I hope it doesn't happen.
Now, you know, it's interesting you bring it up because, you know, I don't know if you remember a couple of weeks ago they had that demonstration at Hunter College in New York. Did you catch that?
Which one?
That was where the young girl was on with Cavuto, and she said, well, I'd be happy to pay 90% of my income to taxes, and, you know, we should get free tuition, all of our debt should be relieved, and we should make $15 an hour. What do you make of all that crap?
They're out of their minds. Todd, you and I are the same age, basically. And when I grew up, my first job was $1.80 an hour, and I annualized it. It's a little better than, if you annualize $1.80 from when I started to now, it's better than the minimum wage. Probably, I think it equates out to about $11. But let's put that aside for a second. When I first started stocking shelves at a grocery store, for that matter, gathering carts out of the parking lot, I knew this wasn't going to be my career. But what I did know is it was going to give me a little bit of money to start doing things on my own and find myself a better job as I went along. And the early part of my career, I did that. I did a bunch of different jobs. I went to college for a year, quit, became a body and fender man, did quite well as a body and fender man. But that's when I started making some significant money. It had nothing to do with minimum wage or expecting Jewel to be paying me $15 an hour to push a shopping cart around the parking lot. She's out of her mind. And then the whole other thing. Now, when I finally decided body and fender work wasn't going to be good for me in the long haul and I went back to college, I had no money. My father passed away when I was in eighth grade. My mother didn't have any money. So there wasn't money for me to pay for college. So what did I have to do? I used the government for what I could. There were some grants available to me, but I also took out student loans. And the student loan I took out back then was $10,000, and that's very equivalent to what people are paying right now on their student loans when they give you the figure. What is it, $50,000 or whatever it is? It's very similar to what those levels are right now. And again, I knew I had to pay the government back. I had to pay the student loan. There was no question about my ability to do it. I didn't expect anybody to give me a handout. I didn't want everything free. I didn't want my debts clean. So what did I do? I saved as much money as I can early in my career, even though I wasn't making much. And I put it all in the bank, or not in the bank, I put it all into paying off this loan. And that's the problem with what this girl was putting out is, well, I don't want to have to do all that. That's too hard for me to do. No, that's what you have to do. You have to work hard. If you want to achieve something, you have to put effort out for it. We can't expect the government to provide us all along the way. Otherwise, you're going to end up with a European society, and people talk about how great it is. Well, I look at it, and I don't think it's so hot.
Well, I mean, are we not just really becoming like a bigger version of Greece right now? I mean, we're spending much more than we're taking in, and everybody wants to be entitled. I mean, is that not a problem?
It's absolutely a problem. That's why I brought up the European thing, because we're going to end up, even though Europe's a little better right now, they're still in disastrous shape. Their welfare programs over there are ridiculous. The amount of taxes they pay on their income is ridiculous, and the government isn't spending the money properly. They're just giving things away because, oh, well, you know what, we have to take care of our people. How do you take care of your people? By a growing economy and a tax base on a reasonable level. So that could very well happen if we continue on this course, because the entitlement programs have grown incredibly over the last 7.5 years. And it just can't continue this way.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's sad, Dan, because, you know, our founding fathers, when they originally built this country, this is not what they had in mind, to have, you know, government controlling everything. And, you know, obviously you can go back and look at some of the old quotes from what they have to say. But overall, I mean, you know, we are running a Ponzi scheme, because when you continue to bring in new money or print new money to pay satisfied old debt, and there's so many adjustments that have been made, do you think that do you think that we'll ever actually really figure it out, in your opinion? You know, and again, because it's going to take more than just a Reagan. Again, it's going to take a lot, but there has to be a lot of long-term changes in the overall way that everybody does things. Do you think we'll ever figure that out in our lifetime?
If we don't figure it out in our lifetime, it's going to be forced upon us, and it's going to be a real ugly situation. So I tend to believe in our model in the U.S., and I do think we'll figure it out. It's just going to take some time, and it's going to take some bad experiences in order for it to happen.
Okay, so when you say, like, what would you consider a bad experience that would maybe force the hand of the people in charge to do? What do you think might happen?
Well, I mean, you can only go so far in giving out free things without having the money to pay for them. Just for an example, I don't think this would happen, but it could happen. What if some of the foreign entities that hold our debt start saying, you know what, you don't look like a good bet anymore, we're going to start dumping it. And you're going to start dumping U.S. debt. That's going to create a major problem. That's going to wake up a lot of people.
Okay, so you know, as we look and we gather, and again, one thing we both know, right? The general economy has nothing to do with the stock market, right? Do we both agree on that?
Yeah.
Right? Because the stock market is the stock market and it does what it does. And, you know, it used to be you could count on the stock market to be more forward-thinking and would tell you that things were getting maybe better. But we, over the last 7 years, we really haven't seen that because we've actually seen a shrink of smaller companies. We've seen, obviously, a lot of merger and acquisitions, and we've seen actually a lot of companies just, you know, eliminating their dividends, buying back their own stock, doing things like that because they've created an artificial balance sheet. And that is not a good scenario either, is it?
No, it's not. I mean, we have to look at things that will allow us to sustain a decent level of living without putting us in the bank. And as you say, you know, you can't just keep borrowing your way to prosperity. You can't borrow your way to prosperity. That's used a lot. And that pretty much sums it up.
So, you know, again, I got a lot of things, you know, I want to talk about when we come back from the break, Dan. I want to talk about the tax inversion, Hillary Clinton's idea of the exit tax, because again, I think there's so many better solutions to the economy than what we're getting, and you would think that supposedly, you know, the smartest people in the room would have a better idea or a better handle on how to handle those things, and it doesn't seem to me that they really have a clue. So think about that as we step out the break. We're with my man, my friend, Dan Stesich, what you get with Dan really too is a very well-rounded person because he's done the actual hard labor work. He's been a trader, he's an advisor, and he's now become somebody who really learns and understands how to watch out for your money. So you can check him out, Athena Private Wealth, and you can reach him at 847-299-8877. And if he's not there, you can talk to any of the crew there because they all are on the same team and their team is your team. So make sure you go check him out. And also make sure you go check out thebubbashow.org and take a look at our new hedging program. As we have said, it's a way to preserve your capital and create the model which guys like Athena create for you, which is that compounding model, because the whole key to investing is compounding your money and making it better for you. And that's really what it comes down to as we look into life, is to how to make that investment and have it continue to grow without having to have the worry of when the financial system will collapse again, because mathematically, we all know it will collapse. And make sure you catch the show on demand at libertytalk.fm. This is The Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz. We'll be right back after the break. The Bubba Show. Welcome back to The Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz with my friend Dan Stesich, the big angry redhead, at Daniel K. Stesich on Twitter. Athena Private Wealth, great advisor. But Dan, you know, some of the big concerns, I think, and some things are so simple. I mean, it's weird that nobody can figure it out but you and me, because we aren't the smartest guys on the block. But, I mean, this inversion, this taking people out, now Hillary Clinton wants to tax an exit tax. Wouldn't it make sense just to figure out a way to bring all that money back here and give them a hell of a tax break to put people back to work in the United States of America?
Why do something so easy like that? You got to make it complicated. No, it's completely asinine. You know what, though, Todd? She's playing politics right now. That sounds real good. All these companies are making so much overseas. We got to tax them. But the reality is, some of these companies that have done this tax inversion, they have done it because of the obvious high tax rates here. So even let's assume Hillary's plan goes through. So you tax a company one time. And you talked about compounding before going through the break. Okay, we tax them one time. But what about the subsequent 25, 50 years? What are we getting from them? Nothing. So, like you said, let's figure out a way of bringing the profits back here into the U.S. or the taxes into the U.S. by lowering the overall rate. Because as it stands, 0% of zero is zero. Or I should say 35% of zero is zero. But let's say we lower the rate, and just for argument's sake, to 25%. Okay, now we're only getting 25% of the existing amount that's there, but all the other money that moves back in, we're going to get 25% of that. It doesn't take a lot to bring that number up, and that extra money will be invested in the U.S. But as you say, you know, why put a simple plan out like that? Way too easy.
So I look at there's just so many things, and don't you think there's enough unemployed people in America that if we brought some of the manufacturing, I mean, the biggest problem I see in this country, Dan, is guys like you and me. I mean, basically, we're unemployable. I mean, you know, we're, if you had to go out and get a job tomorrow, who would really hire a Dan Stesic?
It's not happening.
That's not a negative. You know, that's not a negative. I mean, that's a thing that you're old, and I'm old. I mean, who's going to want me? I mean, first of all, if they hired us, they'd have to pay us too much because our age and experience become worth more money or whatever. So at the end, isn't it a function of if we could bring back some of this manufacturing work while we're still becoming a technology age, and we put these people back to work? I mean, that was always my theory of creating the war effect here and putting all these guys back to work to rebuild America. Because, you know, with the amount of money that's been spent, you know, we could have rebuilt America 50 times over already.
Well, absolutely. And, you know, they've got to figure out a way of getting the corp more balanced for the rest of the this economy, so that we can repatriate this money. And as you pointed out, you know, you get to a point where guys our age are unemployable just because of experience or whatever, and that shouldn't be the case. These companies should feel confident in hiring somebody with experience and somebody who's going to be reliable. And possibly, you know, if we can repatriate some of this business over here, they'll need that type of labor. And it's going to take a lot to have it done, but it's going to need to be done.
So, I mean, how come you and I can sit here and see that so simply and they can't?
Well, you know what? The problem now is Washington doesn't represent us anymore. They represent their own special interests. And the special interests are keeping them from doing their job, which is to represent us. And until collectively we get together and say, you know what, I'm tired of your nonsense, I'm putting somebody else in that'll do the work of the people, we're not going to see much change. We did see a little bit of that over the last election a year ago. Hopefully we'll see some more this election.
So, you know, Dan, as we, you know, come, you know, we got a few minutes left here, but so 2016, what are you looking for?
More of the same. And actually, we might even be a little more hamstrung because we do have a presidential election coming up. So Obama's hands are tied. He's been a lame duck for the past year, and he's going to be a lame duck for another year. That's just the nature of the presidency. And now it's going to be all jockeying for position. The Democrats and Republicans are going to be saying how evil each other are, and they probably won't get a lot done. I hope I'm wrong in that sense, but if past history is any indicator of the future, it's not looking good. So we'll muddle along. Keep an eye on Europe. If Europe does show some improvement, that'll definitely help us. Oil prices, gas prices will stay on the low end, and not because of demand problems, but because of supply disruption. There's just so much supply out there right now. In order for oil prices to start going up again, we're going to have to start seeing economies increase significantly, and that's not going to be happening next year.
So, as you look around and we see you know, Caterpillar, Deere, good companies, but you know, they're struggling. Farmers are struggling. We're in deflation. Commodities are getting killed. Does that resolve itself soon?
Not unless we see improvement in the economy. And by that, I don't think we see any more improvement in our economy until we see improvement in the world economy. So no.
So, the market, 2016, up or down on the year?
2016. I'm going to say down.
Okay. My bullish or bearish opinion on the market. This is a mathematical certainty that the markets always collapse at some point. Are we closer to a collapse, or do we have another big run in us, in your opinion?
I don't see a big collapse. As a matter of fact, there's a remote possibility we break these high levels we've had, but it's going to take some decent economic data If it doesn't happen in the first quarter of next year, through the first quarter of the next year, then we'll see a down move. In terms of the magnitude of it, look for anywhere between 5 and 15%, but that's assuming the first quarter doesn't do well. If the first quarter does well, we'll get this bump up above the 18,000 level on the dollar, say, and I think we'll just gradually move along from there without much movement.
All right, and the U.S. dollar, does the U.S. dollar pick up some additional strength, or does it continue where it is, very strong, but not at an extreme level yet?
It won't go to an extreme level unless the economy starts improving considerably, and that's not going to happen.
All right, and so Dan, if your clients, you're doing anything special with them going into the next year?
No, yeah, pretty much we summed up what we were doing earlier in the program, and I'm comfortable. This it sounds like such a cop out, but it's a reality. I'm comfortable with positions I have because I don't see any scream to the upside or downside. But I am going to pay attention, and I think we'll be given some hints beforehand. If the market starts to break down, and we'll be able to reposition ourselves at that point. So there's nothing to add. I mean, where do you go out and buy stocks right now? What's value? You mentioned a Caterpillar and a Deere, and probably for the next 3 or 4 years, that would be a good stock, but you might even be able to buy it lower 3 months from now.
All right. Well, Dan Cesich, as always, first of all, Merry Christmas, Happy New Year. Always great to have you on.
And happy New Year and Merry Christmas to yourself and to all your listeners.
Yeah, and Dan, it's Dan is Athena Private Wealth. He is the man, and you can catch him on Fox. You can catch him on BNN. You can catch him on CNBC. All about town. You catch him on Varney, I think, every Wednesday, right, on Varney at 9:30?
Wednesday morning, 8:30, yeah. 9:30 Eastern, right?
9:30 Eastern. Daniel, thank you. This is The Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horowitz. And, of course, another great day here at Bubba Land. And we're going to looking to really move into 2016 with a bang. And two of the things you need to look at is go to thebubbashow.org and check out our new futures program if you want to be a part-time day trader, as well as our hedging program to help you hedge the long term and not have to worry about losses. While being able to participate in gains. But that will do it for today. This is The Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horowitz. Everybody have a great day. Thank you so much for being here. We'll see you back here tomorrow. Same time, same station. The Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horowitz.
Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Liberty Talk FM.